Good afternoon and welcome to the Texas Library Association webinar, Facing Trying Times for Librarians, the Resume. Again, I want to remind people that the sound for today's webinar is available by conference call. Please dial 866-740-1260 and use the same access code for today. If anyone has any problems seeing or hearing any part of today's webinar, please call the ReadyTalk support line at 800-843-9166. That's 800-843-9166. That is a toll-free call. We also want to remind people that continuing education certificates will be available tomorrow, August 5th, at the CE website, www.txla.org/CE. This webinar carries 1 hour of CE credit. A free recording of this webinar will be available by August 11th, that's 1 week from today, at www.txla.org/CE-library. And all of that information is available on the CE page. We are expecting a lot of people for today's webinar. We have over 90 people registered. So we will ask people to minimize background noise by using *6 to mute your phone. That's a *6. You'll be able to restore sound later by using a *7. If you would like to ask a question of our presenter, you're able to raise your hand electronically using the raise hand button. We'll call on you. Or you can chat questions to us using the chat box in the lower left-hand corner of your screen. If anyone is tweeting about today's webinar, the Twitter hashtag for today is #TLAWeb, #TLAWeb. And we are very honored today to have an expert in the field of career planning and placement, Ron Pollack, formerly career director at the iSchool at the University of Texas at Austin. Ron, please take it away.
Thanks a lot, Ted. First of all, I know that you are going to think about how in the heck do I get a job and what do I do with a resume, and you've already had a session on talking about some of the things about your skills, but we're going to kind of go over some of those as well. But what really concerns me is that so many people submit countless copies of resumes, and then they sit back and wait for responses, and they don't get anything back. And one of the reasons they don't is because they send the same resume to everyone, and it doesn't really cover the things that need to be covered. They don't tailor that resume for the specific position for which they're seeking. There's something to always remember, and we'll go through this further on in the talk today, and that is your resume has to pass a 15-second test. If your resume doesn't reflect in one way or another how you are qualified for that job within a 15-second time frame in that initial review, unless there are no other applicants for the job, you may not pass that test and you may not even be selected, even though you are extremely qualified for that position. So it's really important that people see right off the bat on your resume and with your cover letter how you are qualified, how you meet the needs that they have. So from this, I think that one of the things that is really important for you as we go through this is, what are some of the things I should take away? What are we going to talk about? Well, first of all, you can't write a good resume unless you understand how to analyze a job announcement. That's an important aspect of it. Then you need to understand how to relate your background, your skills, your experience, and your education to that particular job announcement. You need to understand how to describe the things that you've done in terms of accomplishments, where you've contributed to the benefit and the well-being of the organization where you've worked previously. You need to understand that there are some different types of resumes and specific instances where you may want to use one type of resume over another type. You need to understand the value of the words that you use, because sometimes we use words that don't clearly describe what we really know how to do. And also, you need to have perhaps a few ideas on how you can expand the scope of your job search. So we'll try to address a few of those ideas as well. So, what is the purpose of a resume? As you can see on the slide, you've got to answer the employer's question. What can you do for me today? That's why it's so important your resume addresses the needs that an employer has within that job announcement. It has to provide that specific employer with what is essentially a knowledge representation of who you are and what you know how to do, as, once again, it relates to that employer's needs. It has to provide the employer with information about your past performance, because employers tend to look at what you've done in the past as an indicator of what can be expected from you in the future. So if you don't talk about accomplishing things in previous jobs, there may not be that expectation that you're going to accomplish good things for that particular employer. But ultimately, the whole reason you write a resume is so that you get an interview. If you don't pass the resume test, you will never get the interview. If you pass the resume test and you get a phone interview, and you don't pass the phone interview, you'll never get a real interview. So it all is a continuing process that we go through, trying to get you so that you get in front of an employer so that you can wow that employer with who you are and what you know how to do. So we're going to start off. Let's talk about some ideas on how to analyze your current skills in terms that may be used by potential employers. So the first thing you're saying probably is, how in the world am I going to do that? Well, let's see if we can come up with a few ideas. One of the things you need to do is think about asking yourself a number of questions. You may not have ever really done this. Then again, some of you may have, and I hope most of you have. But ask yourself, do I know how to? And think about this. Identify and obtain information to meet the information needs of customers. If you're working in a library now and you don't know how to do that, you probably shouldn't be looking for a new job. Or you will be looking for a new job. Do I know how to organize information for easy access? Well, of course you do. That's something you do on a day-to-day basis. Use a variety of technologies or media to meet the information delivery needs of customers, like the web, social networking, things such as that. How to develop and maintain a budget. Many of you have experience doing that, whether you're in a school library or working with a limited budget or a major budget within a public or an academic library. Do you understand how to develop and conduct programs of instruction? Oh, show people how to do things so that you help develop the information skills of patrons. Do you know how to relate information services to the needs of the parent organization? So do you look at what is the mission of our particular organization, and do I do the things that are important? And can you interact with the public using written and verbal communication skills? The reason I asked you to look at these questions is because when I looked at resumes for librarians, so often the job duties described by a librarian for a particular position is librarian. And that's it. And especially if you're looking outside of the field, people don't understand the skills that you have. There's a stereotype that you want to get around because it just doesn't quite match what you really know how to do. So when we look at that job announcement and we're trying to relate our skills to what that job is asking for, there's some things you want to do, and this is what I recommend you do. First, just read through it. Get an idea of what it's about, because you want to determine whether or not it's even worthwhile for you applying for. But then you read it a second time, and from that you identify each of the requirements, because you're going to have to meet those requirements. And then look at the position duties and identify the duties that are involved. And then list those duties and requirements on a sheet of paper, and then review the organization's webpage, because you may find some interesting things about that particular organization. One good example that always comes to mind is I looked at a children's librarian position in Virginia, and when you went to the website, you discovered that they had just completed remodeling this particular branch of the library, and when they remodeled it, they put an information technology lab. Things that they wanted to do in the Information Technology Lab was conduct instruction in web design and in online search and in the use of basic office automation software. Well, that wasn't in the job announcement, but if you include that in your resume and you include your ability to do that in your cover letter, you're addressing something that people who don't look at that website won't even know about. So it gives you that little extra advantage. And believe me, when I talk to employers over those 11 years that I was with the iSchool, one of the things that they said was most common among people who applied for jobs for them with them was the fact that they had never looked at that organization and knew nothing about it. So you want to make sure you're communicating that you know something about it. Once you've gone through this, you want to identify opportunities and background information from that employer's webpage, which we just talked about, and then go through and list your skills, your experience, as they relate to the requirements, the duties, and the opportunities. List them on a sheet of paper. And then identify what's needed for the application process. In one instance that I looked at, nowhere on the job announcement did it say that you needed to fill out a city application. Yet when you looked at the website, it was mandatory that in addition to your resume, you put in a city application, and that way you could go ahead and complete it ahead of time. And then also, most importantly, identify deadlines for submission. If it goes in late, more than likely you're not going to be looked at all. So when we look at those job announcements, one of the things that they end up doing is they end up providing you, that job announcement is like a blueprint. And when you're looking at that blueprint, one of the things that you want to think about is something Stephen Covey really pointed out in the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, but he used the statement that you begin with the end in mind, that there's a mental first creation and a physical or second creation to all things. Now, that job announcement represents that mental creation. That's the final, that's the thing that you want to do. And then the physical part of it is you going back and looking at your resume, your application, your cover letter, and making sure that it's matching that end state that you want to achieve. And as you go through completing your resume, always go back to that job announcement. Look at it. Make sure, am I aligning my skills, my qualifications, my educational experiences, so that they match up with the things that are being looked for. Use that job announcement as your blueprint. So do we have any questions right now? Is it safe to answer any?
We did have one question, okay. Actually, Ron. One person asks, how can they present what they've done in a good light without seeming like they're boasting or overstating things?
That's an excellent question, because I once had a young man who was from the Soviet Union originally, and then from Russia once I converted to, and I became a separate country and the Iron Curtain fell down. And he said, I can't tell people things that I've done, because if I did that, I would be boasting. Well, the thing about it is, if you don't tell people what you know how to do, who else is going to do it? And when are you going to get a chance to do that? And it's not boasting if you've done it. Now, I'm from Texas. Some of you are, some of you aren't. And the old saying here is, if you've done it, it ain't boasting. And it ain't bragging. So the thing about it is, if you are exaggerating, if you are creating instances that don't exist, yeah, that's terrible. But if you're reporting the things that you did, and we'll go through some ways to do that as we go through this, you are going to have to let people know what you know how to do, because if you don't, no one else is going to do that for you. And hopefully that'll answer the question. There are several different kinds of resumes. We're going to talk briefly about three. One's a chronological, the other is a functional or combination resume, and the third one is a federal resume. And they have three very separate functions, and so we'll talk a little bit about each one of those functions, and hopefully this will give you a little background so that it'll help you as you're going through and deciding which type you want to use. And then we'll talk a little bit as we go through about how to structure those resumes. You probably know that a chronological resume for the field in which you're in, that's probably the most commonly used resume format. Most employers and most people who are applying for jobs understand how to prepare one. And it's most effective if you have experience, specific experience in that field of interest. With it, you can include metrics indicating successes in previous jobs. You can include big-name employers or impressive job titles. They count. You can include promotions or increased responsibilities. You know, if you're really doing an outstanding job of customer service in the organization that you work for, how do you prove it? And one of the ways you prove it would be, for instance, in a statement that would say, outstanding customer service recognized by 2 promotions within 18 months. You had something that happened. Or the receipt of the Outstanding Employee of the Month award 3 times in the last year. In other words, you're quantifying so that you can actually document the fact that, yes, you do provide outstanding customer service. Normally, a chronological resume is in reverse chronological order. That means the most recent is first. That's your education and your job experiences. And it's kind of flexible. And we'll talk later on in this a little bit about a section that you may want to put with it called either a summary of qualifications or a professional profile. And this you want to use if you have specific experience related to the position. And we'll go into more detail on that. The other thing is a chronological resume demonstrates continuity of work experience. If you've been out of work for a while or you've gone away from the profession for a while, you may say, well, this isn't going to work for me. Well, we'll talk about another way that perhaps you can do a resume that may help, and a chronological resume may not be the right one for you to use. The last thing is HR people like to see things that are simple. And as we go through talking about resumes, I have a saying which is not very flattering for some people, but I use it anyway, and I call it keep it simple for simple minds. You want to make sure that whoever reads your resume will have no problem with the language that is used. They will have no problems relating the things that you've done with the things that are being asked for in the job announcement. And by doing the chronological type resume and putting the date so that everything is spelled out, if you have continuous employment, it provides that clear path where they don't scratch their heads and say, oh, what the heck is going on here? What do they do during this time period? Now, if you do have a break, there are legitimate breaks that you can explain. And many people will get out of the profession for a while because they have a child or there is a move that's involved or some other thing that may come into it, you know, and some of the people go back to school for a while and they don't work. And there are legitimate reasons that show that you're away, but at the same time you're developing additional skills or there is a valid reason for it. Kind of a template to use. If you have limited experience, start off with a heading. Make sure you have your full contact information. I have seen resumes that did not have an address and did not have an email and did not have a phone number on it. All they had was their name on it. And, and when I looked at the cover letter, it didn't either. How's the employer supposed to get in touch with you? So make sure the full contact information is in your heading. Now, a word of warning. If you're going to put this into an online open database of resumes, you don't want to put your full contact information. The only thing really that you should put should be your email address, because you don't want people calling you and you don't want people showing up on your front step. Now, normally, since you've been working, the next experience will be the next heading that you'll have in the resume. If you're in school and you're going to be leaving school and getting your first job, your education is probably going to be before experience, because the education may have more importance than some of the work experience that you've had. You also want to make sure that you have a section which talks about skills that you have, specific skills with computers, databases, languages, things that relate and will show value that you can bring along with the basic skills that are required for the job. And then the last thing, if relevant and if they're asked for it, you might want to include organizations also that shows that you're involved in the professional development within your profession. And most of the time when you show involvement in the professional organization that supports the particular job that you're working with, that is something that adds to the indication that you are truly a professional. Now, if you look on the right, if you've got relevant experience, you probably want to start with your heading again, but then you want to put something that's a professional profile, and I've got an example a little bit later on that we'll go through with that. This professional profile is important because you want to make sure, if you've got the specific skills that they're asking for, that they're listed here first, so they don't have to read all the way through the resume to find it. You're giving them a Cliff Notes version of, here is why I'm a good choice for this job. And it's something, it meets a 10-second test. They don't even have to read it in 15 seconds. And the problem is, if you put a professional profile and you put things like good communication skills, experienced in working with people, that probably isn't the critical skill sets or requirements that they're asking for, and it's not going to relate. And if you don't know how to structure a resume to where you're telling me the most effective and relevant things first, you probably don't have good communication skills, and I'm not going to talk to you. I'm not even going to read your resume any further. and that goes into my little circle file that's blue that's recycled. So after that professional profile, then you put your experience, your skills and languages, your education, and then organizations if they're relevant. Now, with a functional or combination resume, there are two reasons for using this. As you look at the top of it, it's organized by skills or knowledge that's related directly to the job announcement. So instead of having a heading, such and such a position for such and such an organization, location, and dates, it'll have a heading that may say reference and instruction. And then following that, you, instead of having all kinds of other things, you would talk specifically about all of the experiences you have that establish that you have the skills needed for reference and instruction. Collection development may be another one. Web development could be one. But once again, these categories are taken directly off of the resume. And if you look at, the job announcement. And if you look at the job announcement, whatever they're emphasizing the most, that's what you want to put first. You want to make sure they see the most important and the most relevant thing first so they don't have to look for it. And one of the things that it does, it facilitates inclusion of experience from internships, volunteer positions, however you may have done it. And in some instances, especially things like web development and some and when you're using computer-generated imaging and things such as that, that may be a hobby in which you've developed superior skills. You can bring that up also. Now, if you're looking to transition into another organization, perhaps it's a high-tech firm, especially the smaller firms, many of them will prefer to have a functional resume. They don't care about all the other job history stuff, all of that. What they want to know is, what do you know how to do that matches what I need somebody to come in and do right now? Now, another thing is a functional combination resume is usually limited to one page. Now, I've actually had an individual who had just retired from a large, it developed into a large tech firm, and he reviewed all of the resumes that came in. And I asked him specifically, do you want to see resumes that are only one page? He said, no, I don't want to see that. I don't want to see a chronological. I want to see a functional resume. But if a person has skills and they're telling me what they've done that reflects they know those skills, I don't care if it's a couple of pages long. But I want to make sure that what they're doing is describing the skills that I need so I can make an effective decision on getting to talk to them to try to hire them. So that's something you want to think about. Now, some of the advantages of it, it provides a synopsis of specific skills and abilities that match the resume without having to go through the employers and the timeline. It communicates professional growth, things that you've done where you've improved. And it diminishes the problem of a work history because you're not actually listing it on the functional resume. Now, there is a caution because if there are HR people involved, a lot of times they're a little bit suspicious if they have a resume that comes in and there's no work history with it. So if you've got a work history and you can work it that way and you're looking for a more traditional job, yeah, you probably want to use the chronological. If you're looking for either a tech or you're looking for one that is specifically looking for people who are doing specific things and that functional may work. The thing about it is a combination is a functional resume, but then you have just a listing of the employers. Now, it can be the name, the job, the employer, and the dates, or it could just be the job you had and the employer. You don't even have to put dates in it. So it gets to be really kind of an important thing to have. Now, look at a kind of a template. The basic functional resume format is a heading, your experience by skill groups, and then it's a skill groups, a group by the employer categories as they've indicated it, followed by the educational level. Or the educational experience. So you've got a heading, and then you have grouped by categories listed in the job announcement, your experience, your knowledge, your skills, and then you have your education. Now, in a combination, you're going to have exactly the same thing, but you'll have the heading, the experience, skill groups by the employer categories. Then you'll list your employers, And like I said, the location and date may not even be important and not necessary, but you want to make sure you have employer names and locations. I mean, the job employer names and the location, optional. And then your education after that. Now, the next thing is a little different. A federal resume is not the easiest thing in the world to do because it's rather involved. And I'm sure some of you have looked at federal jobs and looked at the federal resume format. Most of them through USA Jobs, you can do the online resume. I know that some people think you're going to do one resume and forget about it, and then you submit it to everyone. Believe me, federal jobs don't quite work that way. And so let's go through this, these little bullets, and then we'll talk a little bit more about it. The USAjobs.com program is where it's actually required for all of the people who are applying for jobs. All the people who have jobs were required to put them on it. That started a few years ago. It took a while to get most of the organizations to actually do it. And the last, I was a member of the Southeastern Federal Recruiting Council for a number of years, and when I retired, they were just getting to where everybody was actually putting their job announcements on USA Jobs. Now, some of the things you may be required to provide personal identification information. You may end up having to put a Social Security number in it. When you talk about employers, not only are you going to have to do a thing where you've got the job and who it was within the year, but you're going to have to put names, addresses. You're going to have to put telephone numbers. You're going to have to put email addresses, perhaps. So all of those things you're going to need to gather together. Now, the good thing is once you put one together, you can modify it in the future because you're allowed to have several different resumes, and you can store all of those online. Now, don't forget, when you complete this resume, there's a section for special skills, and you want to make sure you include that, any languages you have, any specific knowledge you have that would have value to the kind of job, any relevant coursework, any research projects, any honors that you've had. They all go in the additional information section. And there's something else that you really have to be concerned about. For years, it was a separate section called Knowledge, Skills, and Abilities, and they're moving away from KSAs now, and they're going to where you're going to have employment questionnaires that are job-specific questionnaires that you may have to complete. Well, a resume is used for something that, you may not know about. It's used just to determine if you've got basic qualifications. It has nothing to do with whether or not you're going to be called in for an interview. The thing that's so important to realize is either by completing the knowledge, skills, and abilities for those that still ask for, or completing your employment questionnaire that is specifically related to that job, those are the things that are used to determine where you sit in the ranking order of people that they're going to talk to. And in many instances, federal jobs, when they interview, may interview only one or two people. Many times they will only interview the top person to see if that individual actually meets the qualifications and everything's correct. And they won't even go any further than that. So like one of the students I worked with years ago, totally qualified for a job, never got an interview. But when I talked to him about it, he had blown away the KSA portion of it. Four KSAs had written no more than two sentences for either one when he actually should have had a page for each one. So that's really an important aspect to remember when you're looking at federal jobs. Now, that's what I talk about in this next bullet. The resume determines if the minimum qualifications are met, KSA statements, and those qualification surveys determine the position in the selection roster. And the other thing is when you write a federal resume, you want to make sure as you're writing it, that you describe the problem you addressed, the actions you took, and the results of those actions. They want to see where you have accomplished something, where you've solved a problem. It's important to do that. And do we have a question?
We have a couple of questions,
okay,
Ron.
Good.
The first question, this is from someone who describes herself as an older person. And if you're filling out a resume as an older person, do you put dates when you worked or the dates of your degrees? Those dates would translate to your age when applying for school jobs are the ones she cites. And she worries that employers may not want to pay the salary for years of experience. How do you address that?
This is really a difficult thing. Since I just turned 68 on Sunday, I know exactly how it feels. So with a formatted resume where you're using the functional or combination resume, dates don't become that important. Skills are what are really being looked at. When you're doing a combination resume, usually you're not going to go back more than 10 or 15 years. Because once you get experience that's older than that, generally it's not going to be as relevant unless you've had a job that you've had for 15 or 20 years. So you can get around that by either using the functional resume format or don't go any further back than the 15 years or so. The other thing that you can do is you don't necessarily have to list the dates of those degrees. Now, if you're doing a federal application, yeah, you have to, because they're not going to look at your application unless you do. But then again, they're also forbidden from discriminating against you because of your age. So it is a very difficult question to understand exactly what you're asking. And in all honesty, it depends upon the organization. Some organizations are finally realizing that older workers who have kept up with technology, who have been involved in the community, provide superior customer service, superior knowledge. They have that working knowledge of how things should be done and how to treat people. And they also have a historical perspective that they can set things in that really makes them very valuable. And quite often, with younger employees, they don't have that perspective and they just don't do quite as good a job. So those are the things you want to sell also, that because you have the experience, here are the things I can do that you're not going to find with people who are younger than me. And turn it, instead of a disadvantage, into an advantage for you. I know it's hard to do, but that is something that you need to think through and work on and talk to other people as you're going through. Do your discussion about your background, your experiences with other people, and have them come back to you and evaluate, am I presenting it to show that I'm really displaying that I know more and that I'm more valuable than someone who does not have my level of experience.
Thanks, Ron. And we also have a question from Danny. He's wondering the best way to handle a lot of continuing education training he has done. He supposes that it would be included in the education section of the resume. Some of his CE training has allowed him to receive specific training in a couple areas of library work, such as cataloging and genealogy. And he's just wondering how to include that.
Good question. I once did a resume and a person looked at me and they looked at all of the continuing education classes I had and they said, did you ever have time to work? And my ears turned red. As you can imagine, yeah, I worked and I did this too. But the thing that happens when we list all of our continuing education, what happens is the emphasis goes to all the time that we spend into it, and it may not be as much emphasis on the skills that we've gained. So why not, in your skills section, put a short little comment about the additional skills that you've developed through continuing education. Now, if you're using a functional resume, it's just gathered by that if those are important things for the job for which you're applying for. Now, there's no easy way to do this, and everything is, in most instances, because nothing works on 100% of the time. But think about continuing education. So you develop a thorough understanding of cataloging or the development of serials collections, and most of the experience came through continuing education. You could say developed a thorough understanding of development of serials through 18 hours or 25 hours of continuing education. But once again, when you talk about things in the CE portion, make sure that what you're talking about are things that they're asking for on the job. Don't waste paper, don't waste time about things that are nice for you, but may not have that relative importance to that particular employer. And when you look at it from that perspective, that's what helps kind of trim down what we put into our resume, because we have to remember, what we want to do is tell the story of everything that we know. What the employer wants is us to tell them what we know that they need. So you've got to make that distinction, and that can help you outline what you want to put into your resume, what you want to put into your cover letter, so that you can be a little more specific and nail things right head on that people are looking for. I hope that will help a little bit.
Thanks.
Okay. Oh, let's go to our next little portion. So we're going to talk a little bit. We're going to kind of move on. I've talked about accomplishments and writing about them. This is so important, and we'll get back to that question about bragging or putting ourselves forward. You have to talk about things in terms of what you've accomplished. And when you do that, think about, you know, what did I do? How did I do it? What was the value that I produced? And if you're going to talk about it, make sure that if you put a value judgment on it, if something can be backed up with metrics. One of the things that I really loved was a young woman who had written a resume, and in it she said, I provided world-class customer service. And I asked her, what's world-class? And she said, well, that's really good service. I said, no, that means it's recognized as the best in the world. Tell me how you were recognized. Well, I really gave good customer service. How were you recognized? Well, I really gave good customer service. In other words, she felt like she gave good customer service, and she probably did, but she didn't have she didn't have anything that actually backed up that she had. But why not, if she's going to address the customer service aspect, why not say, I developed a thorough understanding of providing excellent customer service through a combination of my work experience and my educational work, without having to say, I'm the best in the world, which automatically people are going to say, hey, we know that isn't true. So let's look here. Going a little further with developing accomplishments. This is what's really interesting, because people will say, I never really accomplished anything. So have you ever accomplished or achieved more with the same resources? If you're in a library right now, you are faced with that situation. I think everyone there will agree. Because you either have the same resources or you have less. And that's, you accomplish or achieve the same results with fewer resources. We're all being asked to do that these days. You improved operations or made things easier and more viable for the overall operation. You resolve panic problems with little or no increase in time, energy, dollar cost, personnel, other resources. You did something for the first time. Now, I've had students that would come in, well, you know, I've never really worked. I haven't been in the library. I really haven't done anything. Well, you worked at this particular job, and you did administrative things. Did you do any filing? Oh, yeah, I set up a filing system for them. They didn't have one. Wow. Understands the organization of information. Put down, initiated, and developed a filing system using a locally devised organizational scheme. There are things that you've done. So that's why you've got to ask yourself these questions. What have I done where I've actually contributed? Because most of us never think of the activities that we do on a day-to-day basis in these terms. We do it because it's part of the job. It's what we are there to do, and we don't look at it from this perspective. So that's what I'm asking you to do, is take a new look at what you do on a day-to-day basis. So things, what did you do? Did you see problems or opportunities or challenges? And then did you take the initiative to recommend something? Sometimes we see a problem, we make a recommendation, it isn't acted upon. But at least we saw the problem and we made a recommendation whether it's acted on or not. Did we develop something? Did we create or design a new department, a program, a procedure, a plan, a service, a product? How many times have people developed new reading programs or a new aspect for the children's program? Or looked at some kind of outreach program, or looked at involving social networking in the way that you're providing services. These are all things that you may have done. Did you identify a need for a plan, a program, a product, service, or procedure? Did you prepare any original reports? Did you prepare any papers, documents? Did you ever write a grant proposal? Oh, and even more importantly, was it ever actually acted upon to where money was received? I think everybody here needs money. If you have grant writing experience and you've had successful experience, makes it even better. You want to talk about that experience because money is important to everybody. Have you ever made or participated in any direct or indirect technical contributions? Have you participated in major management decisions or organizational changes? Not where you made the decision, but have you participated in teams? Think of working in a team-based environment, giving examples of addressing problems within the organization to solve a problem or to create a new product as a member of a team. And have you ever implemented, participated in any sales and or profit and or cost-saving recommendations? You see a better way to do something. You see a vendor that can provide services or supplies at a better cost to make the recommendation. Have you done things such as this? These are all questions that you want to ask yourself as you're going through to make a determination as to whether or not what you've done is an accomplishment. So, when you look at developing these statements, once again, we're going back to the how did you develop, design, or create, or implement your plan, your program, your product, service, procedure. You want to talk about that. How did your employer benefit from your efforts? Can you quantify your results? Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. But if you developed a new approach, and we'll see an example in a little while to one of these, if you developed a new program, for instance, let's say that you developed a program for senior citizens, and you had a 40% increase in participation, you need to talk about that. Or let's say that you developed and presented for the first time a program on working with Facebook. Or even better yet, because there are a lot of people who are using iPhones these days and for all kinds of communication, but looking at it from the business perspective, you put together a seminar for business people to come in and actually learn how to more effectively use the application so it becomes a better tool to use as a business tool. So, ideas that may help, did your results save dollars, generate new business, increase sales or profits? Well, if you're in a library, most of the time you didn't do that, but sometimes you may have. Did your results improve efficiency, time, manpower, procedures? Did your results make an impact on the organization? Can you measure results in numerical or percentage terms? If you can, you do want to include that. And I realize many times you can't. Now, some cautions. Sometimes we really make those general statements, and we'll lay claim to improvements without explanation. We'll cite reductions in costs or increases in efficiency without quantified measurements. We'll take credit for progress without providing some element of detail. And we'll use terms such as excellent, world-class, superior, without independent evaluation that provided that rating. So if you view those types of descriptions of what you've done, you want to make sure that you try to describe some way or another that it, how it was actually recognized. I think we got a question.
There was. Philip was wondering, what sort of verification do you suggest for accomplishments? Are good employee reviews okay to cite in your resume?
Quite often employee reviews are an excellent site because I can remember one in particular. University of Texas has problems with money like every other academic institution has. And when I first started as a director, my predecessor had three full-time employees, had seven work studies, plus herself. And when I came, I started with two full-time employees and three work studies, and then it was cut from one to one full-time employee and one work study. And in one of my evaluations, I got a comment which talked about how I had anticipated that there were going to be cost reductions and therefore a reduction in the size of the office staff, that I had addressed those issues by revamping the way we conducted business, using the web and other means of communication so that we changed the way we advertised jobs, the way we communicated things and used the web as a day-to-day tool, to where we continued our services at or above the level that they were prior to me coming into that office, in spite of the fact that we had a substantial reduction in revenue. And any time that you've got things that recognize your activities, yes, make sure that you, if it's on your evaluation, you've got a copy of it, somebody wants to see it, you can take it with you on your interview. So, you know, if you'd like to see what it looked like, here it is. Most of the time they won't ask you. But you can say, yeah, as recognized in my annual review. It's a good question. Okay. I get excited when I do stuff like this. You can't tell, can you? So let's look at some things. This was one of my favorites. This individual had worked in a public library for public, excuse me, the academic library for some time, and this was what was on her resume for her job. Answered questions, shelved books, checked out books, and answered the phone. Now, she was a student, but she actually got to work the reference desk. So what we ended up doing is replacing that statement with three statements. Provided print and online reference services to students, faculty, and staff in the research library of the university with 52,000 students, 19,000 faculty and staff. Taught faculty, staff, and students the use of online reference resources such as, this is a little bit older one, LexisNexis, Dialogue, and Factiva. Now, we use the term taught because that is what was used within the job announcement. They wanted them to teach the use, and they use that term. And then maintain the stacks of a major research library using Library of Congress and Dewey Decimal Classification Systems. So here are the things that she knows how to do other than just answering questions. The questions she answered were reference questions. And what's so funny is when I first asked her the questions about it, I said, well, did you ever answer a question about where's the restroom? Oh, yeah. What time it is? Oh, yeah. Where's the copier? Oh, yeah. Did you ever answer a reference question? Well, sure, that's what I did all the time. But once again, the initial comment has no reflection of ever having answered a reference question. That's why you want to make sure that the comments you write are clear and relate to the needs of that employer as they describe those needs within the job announcement. Let's look at another one. Elements of effective statements. Think about what action did you take, what challenge or problem did you address, what were the results of your action. And let's look at a couple of things, and they kind of address this. These are things that I took from resumes that had done been accomplished some time ago. Duties included website redesign. Now, the question I ask is, did this person ever redesign a website? It says the duties required it or included it, but there's no indication that the individual ever actually did it. Now, remember, words mean things. You want to make sure that you're clear with the words that you use. And in this instance, the individual didn't want to put that he'd created a website because he did it as a person of a team. So my question was, so you worked in a team-based environment to solve a problem and to create something new? Yeah. So we revised it. Create an effective association website. We use the term effective as a member of a three-person team that resulted in a 25% increase in hits within 2 weeks using usability testing and redesign. We quantified why it was an effective website. Look at another one. This came from, which is a little bit old, but it really hits the nail on the head because this was the first resume I looked at when I came to the School of Information. A young woman had graduated in August. It was November when I started to work, and she had yet to get an interview. She had worked in a public library, small public library. She'd worked in a small public library, and she did the cataloging. She was the person in charge of cataloging. And that responsible for cataloging, when I asked her what she really did, what we did with that is we found out she managed a trouble-free migration of a card catalog system into an online catalog system. It was done through a comprehensive cataloging vendor selection process. She was in charge of the entire thing. Now, if you're an employer, what does the second one tell you versus the first one? Someone had a responsibility. You don't even know if she actually did it. The second one lets you know, here's someone who's looked at every cataloging vendor, done an evaluation, has selected a vendor that actually led to a trouble-free migration, which was really nice. You want people who do things like this to work for you. That's why you want to make sure that when you're writing your resume, you describe the things that you did in terms of accomplishments. I love this one, responsible for children's programs, which was, in fact, what the individual was responsible for. But one of the things that she did is she increased participation in a children's summer reading program by 20%, the redesign of the program, and the development of web-based marketing. Why not tell people what you did? Now, is this bragging? No. Is it boasting? No. It is communicating the value that was presented, a fact. And that's what you're trying to do when you write a resume. Now, there's some other things you want to look at when you're doing a resume. Generally, you want to limit them to 2 pages. I know that you're going to hear people say, it's got to be 1 page, it's got to be 1 page. If you have no experience, no knowledge, no skills, if it's more than 1 page, it's going in the trash. But if you know how to do things, if you have experience, if you have skills that relate to the jobs, 2 pages is appropriate. And 1 or 2 instances where people had significant background, I've had both academic and public libraries that actually wanted that person to have that 3-page resume. And it can have value. But once again, everything related to the job. Now, this is something to think about. I've had people say, I don't care what a resume looks at. You know, you can put it on just regular old copier paper. That's fine, just as long as I get one. But think about it from this perspective. You don't know what the particular person reviewing your resume for the first time or doing that final review of it, what that individual's preference is. So are you willing to take a chance that they don't care? What you should do is make sure you use a good quality white or cream-colored bond paper for your resume. You want to put out the best possible front that you can. And remember, just like we as individuals, when we walk in for an interview, you make judgments right off the bat. We make judgments when we look at resumes that come in, we open that envelope, and what tumbles out of it. Also think about, what kind of font do you use? A 10 to 12 point font is usually appropriate. Times New Roman, the 10 point font is a little small because a lot of the people, especially the directors who look at them, are getting older and they don't like small print, so make it easy for them. Now this is something that can be 1 or 2 ways, but to me it makes sense, and to most of the people who get resumes it makes sense. Don't fold or staple your resume. Now why? The reason being that most of the time resumes are looked at by several people, unless they're going to very small organizations, and they have to make copies of it. So if you have it folded and you have it stapled, then it creates problems when they're trying to reproduce it. So you want to make, what you're doing is you're facilitating them reproducing your resume so that it will be easily done in the right order. It won't be torn up, lost, or anything else. Use a large envelope so the resume can be mailed flat. And don't forget, use the language and the keywords that are used in the job announcement. Keep going back to that. It's that important. You can use bold lettering, italics, or underlining, but the thing is, some people will get it to where every other term has got bolding, italics, or something. Keep it simple. You want it to look like a professionally done and completed document. And then focus on providing education, experience that shows what you can do, once again, to meet the employer's needs. I've kind of emphasized that a few times, I think. So, choosing your words carefully. You noticed a couple of those resume entries I talked about said responsible for. Generally, that relates to a job description, not what you actually did. Responsible for does not tell me or anyone that you actually knew how to do the job. And the question I always ask people, have you ever known somebody had a responsibility for doing something, but you're the one who actually did the job? I know I have, and most of the people I've talked to have had that same thing happen. If you know how to do it, make sure you take care of it. Assisted. It can mean that you help by making copies, answer the phone. It doesn't indicate you actually developed any skills, accomplished those tasks. So if you use, instead of assisted, if you actually did something with a group of people, once again, it's like the person who was a member of a 3-person team, created this as a member of a team, worked as a member of this, developed this, or worked on this project under the supervision of. Now, it still may be useful if all that you did was answer the phone and make copies, however. At least you had some relationship with it. And then, what have you been out of the profession for a while? Find out the skills that are necessary for the kinds of jobs that interest you. Look for ways to acquire fresh skills. Volunteer at libraries. Take continuing education courses at community colleges. Courses to acquire new tech skills. Use your local area libraries to learn new databases. That's what reference librarians do. They provide instruction. So don't sit back and say, well, I never use this. Go use resources that are available to you. Review the things you already do that relate to job requirements, committee and organizational activities, household management, budgeting, personal interest in web design, social networking. Convert skills into the language that's used by employers. And then some other things. Current students, if you're a student, while you're in school, get experience. Remember, volunteer experience counts. Take courses to provide the knowledge skills needed for your chosen field. Select projects that expand your knowledge and skills. Use technology and develop skills needed for your chosen field. I can't tell you with this last bullet how upset I would get with a student who would have a capstone project, do it in something other than the area in which they were going to work, whereas that capstone project would have been a showcase of how they understood the transition from the academic classroom experience into the functional operational aspects of that particular job. Use it continually. It's so important. And then here's a thing, a learning resource manager. Just to look at, here's a job announcement that asks, it's not a library. Work daily with faculty and students at a school support curriculum. If you're working in a school library and you're looking for a job, this is exactly what you do. It does do some library orientation, some database instruction, collection development, reference services. Oh, gee, it does some library work, doesn't it? Contributes to the development of the program's philosophy, objectives, and services. Here's the thing. If you look through this, everything that's in here is something that you do as a librarian. So when you're looking at job announcements, don't limit yourself just to the things that are involved with the term library itself. And I was talking about a professional profile. For that job we just looked at, general terms for professional profile, excellent communication skills, analytical mind, inquisitive, reliable, quick learner, versus master's degree in library and information science, 6 years experience working with faculty and administration to support schools curriculum, 8 years experience providing informational literacy, instruction, and reference services to patrons, 8 years experience providing library orientation. You go through this and you can see we're addressing the things that they've asked for in this professional profile and saying right up front, here's what I know how to do. It's important. So, what are we doing? We're trying to focus on how your experience, skills, and education match your employer's needs. That's what this has all been about. Resumes have to do this. And why do we want to make sure we do that? The most important thing about it is, if you do it, most other people don't. And if you explain things as to how you relate, especially in today's job market when so many people are looking for jobs, if you explain how you match what people need, you are going to set yourself apart from everybody else, and you're not going to be lunch or a snack. You're going to be out here on your own, and you're going to be the person they're going to look at. Now, quickly, because we're running out of time, I want to go through a few things. There's a slide here. These are some places that you can look for some job opportunities. U.S. State Department Information Resource Officer. I've actually got a link for this further on, and I'll tell you about it. It's a great job. But Federal Library Jobs. The library series is 1410. You can search on USA Jobs. I've got a slide on that further on. Presidential Management Fellows Program. If you are going to be a graduating student in the next year, you want to make sure you look in this. About half of the students I work with were selected for this. They started off from between GS-9 and GS-11, and several of them now are GS-12s or above. Some one or two of them are making right at a six-figure income now in less than 4 years.
And, Ron, these are all available in the handout, isn't that right?
Yes. Everything here is available in the handout. And do I have a little time?
Well, I want to give our audience permission to leave if they have to be on a reference desk or something like that. We're going to keep going a little bit so that all of this will be on the recording that's available next week, and you'll be able to hear the entire presentation, including the questions that may come up after this point. But we understand that you may have other commitments and need to drop out at this time. For those of you that do, thank you for attending. And, Ron, let's keep going for a little bit.
Okay. I want to show you USA Jobs Advanced Search. If you go to the Advanced Search feature, and if you put in the series number, the code 14, this is for Library and Information Science Occupation Series, and it will give you all the jobs that are listed in that particular series. And if you look at that, there also is a description, and I've got the website identified here for the 1410 job as a librarian for federal government. It gives you the kinds of the basic requirements for that particular job. USA Jobs website, when I did that search using 14 list of jobs that were there right now, they're not a bunch. It depends. At one point in time, 2 years ago, we had 76 new library positions for the United States Air Force. It's being a public librarian on Air Force installations, running children's programs, adult programs, fantastic jobs, and they were in Hawaii, in Spain, in Germany, in Japan, as well as the United States, and the travel is paid for by them. Great opportunities. You want to keep checking on things such as that. Monster.com. I did a search in library science, 524 responses. Now, admittedly, not all of these will be specific jobs in the field in which you're working in, but a number of them are. And if you look, these are the ones that showed up right at the beginning. And as you go through, you will find there are a number of jobs that are located here. Another one, Career Builder. And with that, using the library science for the keyword for it, 1,420 jobs showed up. And then I talked to you a little earlier about that Department of State opportunity as an information resource officer. This is the lowdown on it. There are people who are assigned to regions throughout the world to help the individuals who are from the countries in which U.S. embassies are located, because the library in those embassies are run by the people who are from the country in which it's located. They are supervising librarians. What you end up doing is you're teaching them how to be a librarian. It is a fantastic opportunity. If you have 5 years' experience, preferably in a public library, some supervisory experience, you meet the basic requirements for it. There aren't any openings right now, but I've got circled on here, and I think you can see it here. I'll circle it again. If you look at this, you'll discover that you can be set up so that whenever they have an opening, they will send you an email. You want to make sure you're on that if you have any kind of a desire to do this. Travel throughout the world. I talked to the individual who's ahead of this at one point in time a few years ago, and she told me, Ron, the only time we really lose people is when they retire or die. And the thing about it, though, is they have a number of people who are reaching retirement age now. So it's something to keep an eye on. Some contact information. If I do work with students and other people on an occasional basis, I've got my phone number, I've got my email address. If I retired, it's something that I do on occasion. So hopefully this will help you a little bit. It's a lot to do in a short period of time, and I appreciate all of you sticking along with this, and I wish you the very best. Make sure that you've got such good talents, make sure that you let people know what you really know how to do, because you'll really do well. Thanks, Ed.
Thank you so much, Ron. Okay, you've been listening to Facing Trying Times for Librarians, focusing on the resume, and this has been presented to you by Ron Pollack, and again, I'll put his contact info up on the screen. Thank you so much, Ron, for this great presentation. Incredible information. I know people will be able to get a lot of use out of this. This was brought to you by the Texas Library Association, who you see before you on the screen now. I want to give special thanks to Nan Ellis, whom you see there on the very left-hand side. She is our registration coordinator. Also to Ilea Hershey, who handled our chat for today. Thank you, Ilea. As I'm circling her on the screen. And then over on the far right-hand side, the guy with the beard in the back, that's me, Ted Warner. I'm your continuing education specialist at TLA, and I run the webinar program. I also want to give special thanks to ReadyTalk, our webinar platform. And be sure that you know about the last webinar in our series on job hunting. This is Tell a Great Story, Get a Job. That'll be Thursday, September 15th at 2 p.m. by Carrie McGeith and Cynthia Flater. And they're going to be talking about introducing yourself professionally and telling your story when you want to get that professional position. Please register at www.txla.org/CE. If you have any questions about the webinar series, please be sure to contact me at the information on your screen. And I want to thank everyone for attending today. Thanks so much. Have a great week.